The Charlotte Podcast is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network. Listen to your city at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
Let's do a podcast about Charlotte.
Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of the Charlotte Podcast. This is John.
And this is Miller in this episode 251. Johnny, what's on this week's podcast?
So this week, we're joined by somebody that's been on my list for a while to have on, Pamela Grundy, local historian and author of the recent book titled Legacy, 3 Centuries of Black History in Charlotte, North Carolina. Very excited to have her on and kind of hear her story hear about the book and the subject of the book that she wrote about kind of Charlotte's Black history, which we've covered a little bit on our history segments, but as always, as we talk about an important thing to cover.
Yep. And
we also
we also have cheers and jeers, and we added a subtle game for people listening to play. About halfway through John's interview or our interview, John's dryer goes off and you get to hear the fun tune that has. John didn't think I heard that, but I did.
I don't even notice it anymore.
It's very sweet. It was very lengthy too.
Yeah, it's really long. So long that we've like made up some words to the song. So I don't want to spoil it tell people what
please.
They're
looking for. Can you give me some of the, just a hint of the what the words are?
Your clothes, they are dry now. Your clothes, they are dry. Perfect. Along those lines.
Just what I needed.
Yeah. Oh,
gosh. John, what else is going on? Anything fun for you?
Oh, it's all fun, Miller. I'm very excited for Charlotte Shout coming, by the way.
We have a part.
They didn't even ask us to plug it or anything. I'm just like straight up excited about it. I thought it was so fun. Did you go when it was here a couple years ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Nope.
Oh, well, you hate Uptown. This is before you didn't even live in South Carolina then. Charlotte Shout was so fun. It like didn't even feel like Charlotte when Charlotte Shout is in town. So I'm really hoping that. What?
It's so fun. It didn't feel like Charlotte. Are you saying Charlotte's?
Well, it felt like the best, most artistic version of Charlotte. How about that? Is that a nicer way to say it?
That is.
Okay. Well. Okay. Anyway, so I'm excited about that.
Speaking of art, we want to talk about. We should plug our last episode with Michael Felder, which was maybe a month ago, where we talked about. I think you refer to it as the last blockbuster, which was Days of Thunder. We just spent an hour and a half talking Days of Thunder.
Yeah, that was great. I need to go back and listen to that again because I had lots of folks who listened to that just be very excited to talk to me about Days of Thunder afterwards.
Really? So,
I don't know.
What would you call like a Days of Thunder fan? A Thunderhead?
Thunderhead? Thundroid? I don't know. Yeah, let's go Thunderhead.
Oh, good. Get on the first shot. John, I did not prep you for this.
Oh.
I'll probably post this afterwards, but I have a long race coming up. I wonder if you can give me, it's going to be some dark moments while I'm out in the woods running by myself, thinking, why am I doing this? Can you give me just a little pep talk that I can hear in my ears? Can you channel your inner supportive guy and just tell me what I should be thinking?
Oh, God, you are putting me on the spot. Yeah, sure. Let's do it. So this is, you want this as kind of like a mantra that you can.
Oh, that's even better. What's my mantra I should think of as I run?
Well, you can go a couple different ways, right? So you can, focus like on the inner. So I would say the first thing I thought was like, nobody cares. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Right. Because it's like,
that's like release. My daily mantra.
Well, exactly. That's kind of why I chose that for you is because I think like, it's kind of like the kind of Eastern mentality of just kind of all of life is on top of like the enlightened being is suffering. Right. So like, nobody cares. So get rid of it. It's like, nobody cares. Nobody cares that your feet hurt. Nobody cares that you broke your toe recently. Nobody cares that you're tired. All that. It's like, nobody cares. So just focus on you and do that. So that's my recommendation.
I did slice my toe recently. That's been the only downside to training.
That's right. That's right. So I'd say just pound it into your head. Like, nobody cares. Just let go. Nobody cares.
Makes sense. I do. How's also that? I have another question for you.
Okay.
That I did not prepare you for. What speed do you listen to podcasts?
Oh, normal speed. I've tried the sped up one. I don't like it.
I've gotten up to a time and a half.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the people whose brains. I actually have kind of a take on this. Do you remember? Do you remember? There's an old SNL sketch where David Spade is like some expert, and he has this like system where he can like save time throughout the day by shortening words. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do not know what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, anyway, it's like in early '90s. This is David Spade and like Chris Farley, like Norm Macdonald's the Weekend Update guy, I think. But he's like, his whole thing is just like, just shorten your words, and then you can get so much more accomplished in your day. So he's like, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious is kind of the punchline of it. Anyway, so the idea of that is like, it's just trivia. That's like something you can do that makes you think you're doing something faster, but you're not really. That's kind of how I feel about listening to podcasts at a faster speed than one.
I'm like, not trying how to much... do more, or I'm not trying to.
Yeah, but like, how day. Much time are you saving?
It's not
really
saving time. It's allowing me to listen to more podcasts.
Yeah, but like, are you really like? Are does it re- like? Are you really stacking them back to back to back?
That I mean, there's a couple. So I listen to a couple more. Like 30-minute long ones. Like, I'm a patron of this college football podcast that's awesome. They do like little 30-minute episodes, and I can knock them out in 20 minutes, and they're really good. It's usually just like a single guy talking about an issue. So it's not like missing the punchlines or jokes or anything like that. Yeah. I also, like, there's 2-hour ones I can knock down to an hour 15.
Yeah, but like, is that worth it?
Yeah.
Even 15 minutes, like, come on, your day is that scheduled that when you're listening to a podcast, you need an extra 15 minutes?
Yes, my day is that scheduled.
Aren't you doing other things, like, whilst listening?
Yeah, like, generally driving, or I like walking around and stuff like that.
But you're not even listening to the whole thing in one go, right?
No, but like, I don't know. This way I can. I'm able to.
What? I don't know, man.
I also have a coworker who swears he listens to this podcast. One, which is terrifying. Two, he says he listens it in 2x speed.
Oh my god, that's horrifying.
Our voices.
No, that's like listening to the Chipmunks Christmas song on repeat. Why would you do that to yourself?
oh, Billy Moneybags. That's what I call him. Well, we should probably get to far more enlightening conversation with Pamela. So when we get back, we'll have Pamela Grundy, author of Legacy, 3 Centuries of Black History in Charlotte, North Carolina.
All right, we are here with Pamela Grundy, Charlotte historian and author of the recent book Legacy, 3 Centuries of Black History in Charlotte, North Carolina. As we just talked about before bringing you on, Pamela, you're somebody I've wanted to have on the podcast here for a while. So officially, it brings me great pleasure to say, welcome Pamela Grundy to the Charlotte podcast.
I'm so pleased to be here.
Well, I have so many questions. I'm so excited about your book. You guys have been teasing it for a while with the publisher, and I knew it was coming out, and I'm very excited to read it. But we like to start our interviews understanding a little bit about our guests personally. So we'd love to start, if you can take us through kind of what's your relationship to the city of Charlotte? How did you come to live here? And I'm very curious, just because I've been on my own journey of learning about Charlotte's history, but I'm curious how you got into the whole Charlotte history thing. So take us through the Pamela Grundy history of your relationship to Charlotte.
Well, my relationship to Charlotte's pretty long one. I came to North Carolina in back in 1988 when I was going to graduate school at Chapel Hill. I came here to do a history PhD. I was interested in oral history. And when I was there, one of the first people I met was this fellow called Tom Hanchett, who was also a graduate student at that time. And Tom was interested in country music, and I was kind of interested in country music. And he let me know that he'd done a big project in Charlotte, and maybe I'd be interested in coming down to Charlotte and looking around and seeing what he'd done. I was particularly interested in radio, history of radio. And so we came down and looked around, and I got a lot of stuff, and wrote my master's thesis on crazy water crystals and hillbilly music on the air in WBT Charlotte. It was a lot of fun, really interesting piece. So that was my first introduction to Charlotte. And then the now Levine Museum of the New South was just getting started in 1992. This was before they had a building. And they wanted to mount their first exhibit for the Final Four that was going to be in Charlotte in 1994. And they were looking for someone to curate this exhibit for them, which would be their first major exhibit. And they couldn't get any real curators because no real curator was foolish enough to think that an exhibit could be curated in that short period of time. But I was kind of getting a little restless with graduate school and interested in doing some other things. And so they asked me if I wanted to come do the exhibit. And I said, sure, why not? How hard could it be? And so I came down and curated the most democratic sport, which for those of you who've been in Charlotte a really long time, was the exhibit in the Big White Igloo right across from the public library where the Big Carolina Theater foyer had used to be. And so I came down and I did that. And this is just to tell a story. As I was coming down from Chapel Hill, I was coming to visit a friend of mine, another graduate student, said, well, you know, maybe there'll be some good men in Charlotte. And I'm like, oh, who knows? Maybe, because Chapel Hill's kind of a small place and all. And then lo and behold, in fact, I did meet the nicest young man. And we've now been married 25 years. Our son has just turned 21. And so I ended up staying in Charlotte. And
fantastic.
As a historian, doing a lot of different kinds of history.
That's that is an adorable ending to that story. So congratulations on 25 years. Yeah, that's awesome. So you came by it honestly. You kind of met the 21st century godfather of Charlotte history, Tom Hanchett, and it sounds like kind of the rest is history. So how did you start writing? Was that part of just kind of digging in and kind of the stuff you were working on, and that turned into kind of writing and putting it out in the media, or kind of what was your journey?
Well, I've been primarily a writer. I had been a journalist for a brief period of time before I went to graduate school. And again, my focus was on oral history and particularly on writing. So that's just always been what I have worked on. I did a number of museum exhibits while I was here in Charlotte, which was a lot of fun to work on. I really enjoy the process of putting together an exhibit and working with a lot of different people and creating something that's not a book. But I'm primarily a writer, so that's what I spend most of my time doing. I actually turned the exhibit, The Most Democratic Sport, Basketball and Culture in the Central Piedmont, into a dissertation on North Carolina school sports that I published as Learning to Win, sort of the history of school sports in North Carolina, all sorts of things, football, basketball, men, women, black, white, high school, college. Anyway, lots of fun. So I did that, and I've done a number of other books through the years. That's kind of what I do.
That's great. We have Miller and I are big sports guys, so we've followed that as well. Let's talk about kind of your most recent book, kind of talking about Charlotte's Black history. I know we've talked a bunch, and I've gotten involved recently with the folks over at the Brooklyn Collective and the Mecklenburg Investment Company, and so we've talked over the years a lot about that history. So the folks that are longtime listeners might kind of understand the basics, and I think there's my feeling at least is there's kind of a broader collective understanding of the Brooklyn neighborhood, and what that looked like in the early 1900s, than maybe there was a couple of years ago. But what's kind of been your relationship to wanting to tell that story and ultimately writing this book? Kind of how did you come about to choose that as a topic across the many others and that you could choose from?
Well, over the years that I've been here, I have spent a lot of time with African Americans here in Charlotte, some native, some not. Vermell Ely from Second Ward High School Alumni Association was a real mentor for me. Fergie, James Ferguson, Lawyer Ferguson, has taught me a lot. And so I've always been fascinated by the Black experience in Charlotte. It's just, well, one, I'd just like to be around the people, and since I'm an oral historian, I like to spend time with them. But it's also a tremendously important story, and it hasn't been told as much as it should be told. And I think the reason that led me to do this particular book was a realization, of course, back in 2020, all of a sudden, there's all this interest in history. Particularly among young people. And as a historian, you wait and wait and wait for these moments where people actually really care about seriously probing into history. And so there was a lot of interest, particularly in Charlotte Black history because of Black Lives Matter and projects like the 1619 Project, things that were telling new stories, or telling stories that some of us knew to a bigger audience. And I realized that if you were someone who was new to Charlotte or someone who was young in Charlotte and you wanted to just get an overview of what African Americans had done in the city, it wasn't going to be very easy because there just wasn't much. There's a little here and a little there. There's some things about Brooklyn. There's a few books, Tom Hanchett's book, Sorting Out the New South City, has pieces of it. There were a couple of other books that had bits, but if you just wanted to kind of get an overview, it wasn't easy to find. And I'd been around enough and done enough that I knew a lot of the material. And so I thought, well, that could be my contribution to this movement, in a sense, is putting out a history, for people to take as a starting point and learn more and try to do more with what they've learned.
I love how you view this as a starting point. It's so such a brilliant way to put it. And as we got through this podcast and we're doing our pre-show, John was talking how he's the amateur historian of this podcast, even though I'm the one with the history degree. But that's something that I've discovered as we've been through this, is it gone through all these episodes, is there's so much history and specifically Black history in Charlotte that's not talked about. And I mean, if people listen to this episode, they probably hit the middle square of a bingo card for us is Jimmie Lee Kirkpatrick because we love that story so much. But just the need and for people to be able to have that entry point and be able to get in there. If you were to kind of introduce people to, African American history in Charlotte, what are kind of the main stories you would lead with?
Well, I think the first one, which in some ways was also new to me, just is how many African Americans have been in Charlotte and been building up Charlotte since the 1700s. There's a tendency in Charlotte to say, well, we're not like down east, we're not like Mississippi, we didn't have the plantation culture. And that has tended that, and I would say also the focus on the Mecklenburg Declaration of Independence and the sort of yeoman farmer liberty has tended to obscure the fact that, by 1850, almost half of Charlotte's residents were African American, and most of them were enslaved, and they did a huge amount of the work, not just It wasn't your classic plantation, everybody picking cotton, although there was some of that. But they were building railroads. They were working in the mines when they started the gold mines here in Charlotte, and making bricks, building buildings, just doing all of this fundamental work that I think has tended to be overlooked.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to choose my words carefully because I totally agree with you. I love the story of the founders of the Grace A. and E. Zion Church and the Mecklenburg Investment Company, and I find it super inspiring and recognize that I might be kind of on in one of the tail ends of people that like really love that story. But I totally agree with you. There's some fascinating stories, really, really fascinating. I think nationally relevant stories that originated here in Charlotte that for a variety of reasons have not been given the proper airtime. I totally see the need and agree with you for the need for your book and kind of a summary too. It makes a ton of sense to me. In the telling of kind of a broad overview, do you have any favorite characters and individuals that stand out? I certainly have my pet favorites, but I'm curious if you have any folks that you find kind of particularly inspirational or just kind of blown away by what they achieved.
Well, there are just so many of them. I have one. I mean, one of the people that I found that is, I mean, you hear really only echoes of her, but it's this woman named Carrie Freeman, and she was enslaved in Mecklenburg County in the early part of the 1800s. Grew up here, and then she made this journey when essentially one of the things that happened in the antebellum era was that as Native Americans were cleared out of other parts of the South, Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, people from Charlotte, especially if you had big families, younger sons, would travel out to inner land and they would take their enslaved workers with them. And so Carrie traveled from at like 13, left Mecklenburg County, went to Tennessee. There she married and actually had a baby, and then was sent down to Arkansas with her baby and not her husband to live to work on a new plantation there. And her daughter actually ended up becoming a very prominent citizen of Little Rock and was interviewed by the WPA many, many, many years later. And she had these amazing stories that Carrie told. She knew Mecklenburg County, if that's how you could find it, it's Mecklenburg County, but about living here, she remembered when the stars fell. That's an amazing event with the in 1834, I think, when there's this incredible meteor shower that people remember. She remembered when everybody was afraid of Nat Turner and everybody got called up to the house to, kind of keep an eye, be kept an eye on. And so just that's just fascinating to me to have a connection to someone from that early era, because there's so few of them. And you just imagine the kind of bravery and, stamina it took to keep moving and, keep working and to raise this quite remarkable daughter. So that's not a name anybody would particularly know, but it means to me, it means a lot, because that is, again, one of those stories that have been lost that if you do a little work, you can find.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorites, just because of the sheer volume of the stuff that he accomplished in a pretty short time, is J.T. Williams, one of the founders of the Grace and the Mecklenburg Investment Company. So Miller, I know I've talked about this guy before, but he was like all of the village people all of their like professions all at once. He was like a doctor. He was a doctor. He was a teacher. He founded like one of the first elementary schools for African Americans in Charlotte. And then he went and decided to become a doctor. And then he was kind of a successful businessman. And then, oh, by the way, he was also one of the first African American diplomats that the US sent internationally. So he's like consul to Sierra Leone. And this was in the 1800s. I had no idea that this guy had was kind of nationally relevant like that. And he had a house like right next to the Grace Church in Uptown. So kind of very much a Charlotte representative and kind of lived a whole life and built a lot of the community here. And I had no idea about this amazing guy until you start digging in a little bit. And he's just one of many stories that you'll find.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's really a whole generation. I mean, I love how on the cover of Legacy we have, Abel Jackson's mural that's got J.T. Williams and W.C. Smith, the newspaper publisher, and Thad Tate, the barber. I mean, there was this whole group of men who really just focused in and built and built and built. And even after, of course, the other thing that people didn't used to know much about, but now know a great deal about, is the white supremacy movement and disfranchisement and the sort of just violent thrust of African Americans out of political power. And a lot of people left North Carolina when that happened. And these are three fellows who did not leave, who decided they were going to stay despite having lost a lot of rights and lost a lot of power, and they were going to keep building and they were going to keep working. And so that's, I think it's quite amazing, the fortitude that they had.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And it's really interesting in an area that you probably know a ton about, but I'd love to dig into more is kind of W.C. Smith in particular. He was kind of Miller. He was the founder and publisher of the Charlotte Messenger, and he even had connections to kind of Eastern North Carolina where he started publishing, where I know we've talked about the Wilmington massacre, really. I don't know what people call it now, but in 1898, but kind of he had a lot of colleagues that were involved in that. So, and he kind of was in Charlotte and around that same time and had lots of opinions and wrote a lot and was kind of very much involved in that kind of what led to the or was involved in the fusion movement and kind of the aftermath of that, certainly in Wilmington. So interesting guy. And like Pamela said, he's one of the faces on that mural that anybody that's driven down Brevard Street at Uptown recently, I'm sure, has seen on
Well, and
those
I think one of
buildings.
the things, I mean, there's a really fascinating story about that because, yes, he published this newspaper for, a good number of years and really just reported on everything that went on. It's this incredible resource to understand what African Americans in Charlotte were doing from their perspective as opposed to, the perspectives of things that, that white folks wrote. And for a long time, nobody or historians didn't realize that those papers had survived. There's a really great story where Jeanette Greenwood, who is another historian who's done work here many years ago, who came here and worked with Tom. Everybody's worked with Tom. I don't know if you've talked with Jeanette, but she was starting to try to do some Black history. And one of the real challenges to doing Black history is a lot of resources are in people's homes or have gotten lost just because of all the disruption that Black communities have undergone. Of course, there's Brooklyn and urban renewal and also the violence around the turn of the century and gentrification, just all sorts of things. And in addition, a lot of African Americans haven't necessarily been trusting of the institutions that keep records for, I'd say, very reasonable reasons. And so a lot of records are in people's homes. And so Jeanette was starting to do work, and she called up to Raleigh to the State Archives, and they said, oh, well, there was this newspaper, the Charlotte Messenger, and but there's only one issue left. That's all there is. We've got it. That's all there is. And so she's like, well, there's not much there. And then she got a call from a fellow who worked at Johnson C. Smith and was a local historian, and I'm afraid I do not remember his name, but he suggested that she go visit a particular home on Bates Ford Road. And so she went, and it turns out that the woman who lived there was the daughter of W.C. Smith. And I talked to Jeanette, and she says, and she went up to the attic, and she started bringing down just volume after volume after volume, bound in leather, you know, just all preserved in her attic. And she was kind enough to let Jeanette come, because back then you didn't have phones and you didn't have, you know, scanners and all that. And so Jeanette would just go and sit at her table and read through the newspaper, and it uncovered this whole world, particularly that was built up right after the Civil War, when there was a little more freedom to do for African Americans to do things. There was a lot of hope. There was a lot of, you know, belief that freedom really had come. And so she was able to access this world that many people thought had been lost. And so
that's
one of the cool things about doing Black history is, you know, finding ways to bring some of these sources back into public view.
Well, no, totally. The work is unfinished there for sure. So sorry, Miller.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't wait to get my hands on this. And Pamela, where can people find this book and learn more and go from there?
Well, it's in lots of places. You can get it at a lot of the bookstores, Park Road Books. If you order from Shelves Books, which is a local Black-owned bookstore, you can get it there. The Queen City Nerve sells it, so you can buy it through them. You can buy it on Amazon. And there's also, I want to emphasize that we really wanted to make this available to the public. I mean, this is not a money-making proposition. Of course, as y'all probably know, books are never really a money-making proposition. But I'm not taking any money from it. And so if you, for whatever reason, you know, don't want to or can't pay for it, it's $10. We made it very cheap, and it's a short book. So it's, again, it really is a summary. You can go to qcnerve.com/legacy, and there's actually a place you can read it online for free as well. So we want it to be available to anybody.
And one other plug, we've talked about the mural in the Brooklyn Collective. I believe, if there's not yet, there's going to be some copies of it available in that building. So the Mecklenburg Investment Company still celebrating its 100th anniversary, by the way, this year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I did drop off a bunch of copies there. So yes.
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 They have them.
Those are, those are available. So awesome.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Pamela. It's been incredible. I'm sure people eat up this book. It's amazing work. And the fact that you're making it so accessible is incredible. So thank you so much.
Oh, we're
for your
done
time.
Already. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Time flies.
Let me
when
just
you're
say
having
one
fun.
Quick. Can I say one quick thing?
Yes, ma'am.
Please.
Okay. I do think one of these things that this book really attempts to do, there's a lot of writing about the destruction that has happened to Black communities in Charlotte and around. This does not downplay that, but this book really strives to be about how Black folks in Charlotte have dealt with their experiences and have, you know, worked around obstacles and made progress and then had setbacks, but really just kept on going. And I think that's something that you'll get out of this. There's a lot of really inspiring stories. There's some sobering ones, but I think it's really meant to be a place to understand what African Americans have done.
I love that. I think that's a perfect point to end on. I was actually saying something similar the other day that I personally just find so much inspiration of kind of the stories of the folks and kind of what they built and endured, and kind of the headwinds that were faced at the time that they did it, and think it's an incredible story that Charlotte should take a lot of pride in. All Charlottians should take a lot of pride in kind of what kind of occurred here over the years, over 100 years ago, because I think it's inspiring for everybody, and I think you kind of shined a light on it with this book. So another reason to read for sure. Well, Pamela, thanks again so much for joining. Like I said, kind of you've been on the list for a while of guests to have on, so really appreciate you making the time. And everybody, go get the book and check it out.
All righty. Well, yeah, do that, and I hope y'all like it, and then keep going and learn more after you've had a chance to look at it.
And we're back, John.
Yes.
Lovely, lovely interview. I'm so appreciative that you set that up.
Yeah, delightful person and really fat, like we talked about, kind of fascinating story. So glad she wrote the book. I totally agree with her that it needed to be written. And like, I don't know, there's some really fascinating stuff. And like we talked about at the end there, like I think there's a lot more really interesting stories to tell that haven't been given their due. And we didn't dig deep into it, but you mentioned kind of Jimmie Lee Kirkpatrick, and this is a totally different era of Charlotte Black history. But I mean, what, like we've talked about, a more dramatic Remember the Titans story that is kind of criminally undertold. I'm talking about the story of the 65 Shrine Bowl. And
We've talked about that enough.
yeah, so yeah, I mean, I'm convinced, like National Treasure, there's a story like that out there that we just
Well,
need
I
to
thought her,
steal.
I because you've done such a good job of with this podcast as a medium to share stories of Black Charlatans. I was fascinated by her talking about 2020 has increased the level of interest.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Like I mentioned at the end, it's the 100th anniversary of the Mecklenburg Investment Company, which is one of the, I believe, three only remaining standing buildings in Uptown from the Brooklyn neighborhood. And
Can
in
I pause you
19.
there, John?
Yeah.
You've mentioned that the Mecklenburg Investment Company, Brooklyn Collective, a few times this podcast. I've mentioned it a few other times. I've taken a tour of it now, and we should, like, everything you're saying is true. It's incredible. If people listen to this podcast who like what we do, that's a place you should check out. 100%.
Yes.
John is talking it up appropriately.
Yeah, I mean it's the oldest commercial building in Uptown. So it's when you talk about Charlotte's history, kind of look no further, right? But one of the things that was fascinating to me in 1918, there's a flu pandemic in the United States, right? That everybody should know and be aware of has happened. And these guys built that place in post-Reconstruction, kind of beginnings to kind of as Jim Crow was happening, and this group of kind of Black professionals built this building that has stood the test of time in Charlotte and is still there 100 years later. So if you can't find that inspiring, and find the parallels between that and kind of where we're at now with, I mean, the history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes type situation, like then, I mean, I just find it fascinating and inspiring, and hopefully read Pamela's book, and everybody else will too.
Yeah, equally. Well, you said it was equally inspiring. I probably disagree, but you said equally inspiring. Our cheers this week was Cheats Cheesecakes.
Oh, that's the old one. But yeah, let's shout them out. I actually have two new ones that aren't on
Why
the
don't
rundown you're looking
you
at.
update the rundown? This is literally the rundown you sent me.
Yeah,
I'm leaving this in, by the way.
we were talking about the schedule, and so I started writing on a different sheet that I was not shared with Miller, and I already have my cheers and
I had
jeers
to
there. But yeah,
request
so
this
hey,
as a sheet.
you know what? I appreciate that you're looking at old information. It's my fault you're looking at, but let's update Cheats Cheesesteaks, because I think in the rundown you're looking at, the part that I didn't update, we shouted them out because I was congratulating them on their new space that's between Elizabeth and Plaza Midwood, like in that little shopping center that's in Chantilly, And they broke ground and they're kind of doing construction. And I guess in the next 6 weeks, they're going to be in there. So I'm very excited. Restaurant opening I'm most excited about in the next couple months is Cheats Cheesesteaks brick and mortar spot along Pecan between Elizabeth and
Would you
Plaza
like to do
Midland. So
your
there you go.
other cheers that you did not share beforehand?
Because they were our recent cheers and jeers, Charlotte FC, I feel like we got to give it up for them
I bought
having
a
two
jersey,
wins
or I'm
already.
getting a jersey.
Oh yeah, that's exciting.
Which player do
I
you
have a
care about?
shirt.
Which?
Oh. Ooh. I don't know. You got what's the guy's name?
Arguably their best
The
player.
oh, Swiderski?
That is
How do you say
incorrect.
that name?
That is
No.
incorrect.
Ben, what's his name?
Yes.
Ben Bindle.
You know how you call the Hornets your sons? I'm calling Ben Bender my
Yes.
son now.
Ben Bender's your
My
son.
large adult son.
Yeah. It's not that large. Yeah, well,
He's plenty
congratulations on your purchase.
large. I'm
Yeah.
Googling this.
I mean, pretty good time. Hornets on the cusp of the playoffs. Oh, wait, I don't want to jinx them because they're up on the Knicks right now.
He's 6 feet tall. He's taller than me.
That's pretty big for a soccer fella. Yeah, well, shouts, big ups to Charlotte FC. And then here's my jeers. Perhaps we can address this on a future episode with a guest that will come on and defend it. But I'm back in uptown for lunch.
Congrats.
Not just for lunch, to work, and then I go to lunch when I'm up to
You
uptown.
just lunch all day.
Just what I wish, kind of. I think that's kind of my schedule some days. But there's not enough outdoor dining. And I get why. I totally understand why. But even pandemic aside, I just got a comical thing to say in March 2022. But pandemic aside, like, there just needs to be more outdoor dining space in Charlotte. Like, we have good weather. We got to take more advantage of that. We're just, the built environment is just not conducive to outdoor dining in uptown. I think you got more and more of it in South End, but need more, man. Let's build back better and have some more outdoor dining space. That's what I say.
That's
So
a good.
jeers to not enough.
Completely agree. Well, John, it has been a great episode. It's good hearing your voice.
Yeah, likewise. Good luck. Good luck on your race. And
If they
remember,
so,
no one
no one
cares.
cares, and you also have a song that goes with your dryer. So, congrats, man.
Thank you. Thank you. We're equally impressive feats by both of us.
Perfect. Well, let's woo and get out of here.
Sounds good.
One, two, three. Woo!
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.